time. Your host for this evening, live from Studio 76 in Valrico, Florida, Derek Old School Fournier.
So I give zero f-
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is Old School coming to you live and direct from Studio 76 in Valrico, Florida. It's been a long time since I've been on the mic here in my own studio, and I got to tell you, it feels fairly alien to me. It's good to have you guys back out there. I know it has been some time. We're going to be working out some of the technical kinks since I literally had not turned this computer on since the end of the season. It looks like the levels are all good. Hopefully, you guys can hear me well out there. I'm going to check the Ustream levels. They all look good. And the video is as good as I can be. So I think we're going to be all right. We will have some fun when it comes to the Skype calls, I'm sure, because that's always an entertaining challenge. We are fortunate, as always, to have some great people calling in to give us content worth talking about, not just me prattling on about my opinions. We have Steve White calling in at 9:15. Steve White's also joining us for our golf tournament, which I'll talk briefly about here in the intro on May 1st. We also have Mark Cook of PewterReport.com calling in at 9:30. My goal here is to do a couple of things. Let me first plug the golf tournament so I can get that out of the way. One of the reasons I've been so out of pocket is because our whole team has been working on our first golf tournament. It's going to benefit one voice. It's called the Trunk Slammers Invitational. It is Friday. We do still have slots available. All of the information is available at WTBReallyMattersTSI.org. We'd love to have your participation, even if it's just in a donation form. All of the proceeds are going to the One Voice Foundation, which, as you know, because you followed us before, benefits pediatric cancer research, familial support, and legislation. So, that being said, we have a number of players, former players, et cetera, that are out there golfing with us. Steve White's one of them. When we ended the season last year in a pit of despair and misery, you guys noticed how much it took a toll on all of us as fans. And, you know, I've followed social media. I stay on Twitter. I watch what's going on. I obviously watch Facebook and the various and sundry groups that are going on. The thing that drives me nuts every year, and this is our 10th season, so kudos to everyone for being here with us. This is our 10th year, so I'm sure we'll be doing some sort of shenanigans and hijinks to commemorate that sort of activity, because 10 years is a damn long time to do anything consistently. But one of the things I've always hated was speculation. I just can't stand it. There's a couple of things that have really kind of become these seminal moments for me as we've done this over the years. One of them was I started this because I thought that fans would want to become more educated in the game. That's not to say that I feel I'm some sort of football professor, but I do know more than the average guy, and I bring folks on like Steve and like Mark and like some of the other guests we've had over the years that do know a tremendous amount about the game. One of the things that I have found out to be resoundingly true is that, by and large, and of course I'm not pointing any fingers at anyone in the chat room or anyone that we speak to on a regular basis, but maybe it's you, I don't know, shit. By and large, people don't want to learn more about the game. They want to have data that they feel supports their narrative, and that's never more obvious than in draft discussions. So, I got asked the other night, and I think Skip's in the room now. Yeah, Skip's in the room. Skip Brown's in the room. So, Skip Brown's like, hey, when am I going to find out what your actual opinion is? And you guys know, as we were talking towards the end of the year about draft, I'm not a college guy. I've never been a college guy. My team, UCF, was D2 and was garbage when I was... Well, they were good in D2, but it didn't count, so I didn't get all excited about it. So, I don't have the sort of emotive response that maybe a Mark Cook does, even though I think he does a good job of isolating that. The other kind of folks we have, like, you know, Scott Reynolds from Pewter Report, huge K-State guy, knows a lot about K-State. I watch what I can watch, and I try and evaluate these guys as players starting from the combine and looking back at their film. So the question directly from Skip is, who do I want the Bucks to draft? And after seeing everything that I've seen from the combines, from the Gruden camps, from everything else, all of the cumulative amount of data that we have, I don't think that there's any question that Jameis Winston is the right pick. That doesn't make me a Jameis homer. That doesn't make me an FSU fan. I believe that when you evaluate this sort of a decision, and I hate being the number one pick, by the way, because being the number one pick, I think the marketing team for the Bucks has done an amazing job. To have the on-the-clock mantra being something that we would bang the drum about is humorous, because what it means when you're on the clock is that you were the shittiest team in the league last year. That's all it means, right? You are so bad that you get to pick first. So, with that option in front of us, I don't think it can be argued, especially given what we have in our cupboard, that quarterback is the position of most need. Now, do I think Jameis Winston is the best player available in the entire draft? No, I don't. I think it's close. I think Leonard Williams may be the best player available. Do I think that we should take Leonard Williams at number one? No, because I think that no matter how damn good Leonard Williams is, if you have a quarterback who's even 80% as good, they're going to touch the ball on every offensive play. You have to go quarterback. And so the question becomes, with the number one pick, is there a quarterback that you feel is worthy of that pick who can carry your franchise? There were two that bubbled to the top this year, Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota. I don't know, and I know that a lot of our listeners, a lot of our fans have it's galvanized us like everything else has, right? There's the camp for Mariota, the camp for Winston. I don't know many people who think that Mariota is a better thrower of the football or quarterback physically. If we take anything off the field, off the table, who's the best quarterback available? You could fix the 400-point defense. Those teams don't win, says Calico Jack. Right. The defense that was relatively improving as the year went on and that the pieces are easier to find, et cetera, et cetera. It's much harder to find a quarterback with that number one spot. I don't think a defensive end fixes the 400-point defense. Do you, Callie? Do you think that one defensive end is what that's going to fix everything? Michael Johnson, if he played well last year, all of a sudden we win those seven games that were last possession wins? Right, that's the other piece is this team isn't so shitty that a turnaround's not possible, in my opinion, and that may be mildly fan-blinded. But it wasn't like we got ran out of the building every game like we did against Atlanta. It's not like we didn't have glimmers of hope from here and there. So I honestly, this is one of those things where it's all of this speculation that we have no control over whatsoever, right? I do think, and I think that the right pick is a quarterback. QB won't fix the defense. The QB can actually help fix the defense if the QB can sustain drives, if the QB can put up points. You're in a different situation if you're not from behind. You're in a different situation if you're able to rest your guys, your rotations change. Improving your offense can improve your defense, just like improving your defense can improve your offense. I don't know if Calico is trying to do point-counterpoint or if he's trying to do devil's advocate in the chat room, but it's a good argument to have, right? Because I think Leonard Williams, when we get Steve White on here, we'll talk about Leonard Williams. Leonard Williams is a damn beast, guys. But I'll tell you what, Lovie Smith would not be able to cross his legs if he picked Leonard Williams with the number one overall pick. His balls would be so huge, it would be physically impossible. Sorry about that. Left my phone sitting on the table. That was a rookie move. Now, if we evaluate just the quarterback, if we talk about the quarterback position, which I believe you have to, I don't believe Leonard Williams is a realistic option, guys, unless there was some sort of a trade down scenario, and I don't see that happening. And if you see everything that's happening here in Tampa, which is interesting, Jameis Winston's already integrating into this area. Now, if we weren't picking one overall, you could argue that this may be smokescreen. Maybe they're trying to give a little rope-a-dope. Maybe they're trying to set up some other player. We pick number one. We get whoever the fuck we want. We don't have to smokescreen anything. Now, could we inflate someone's value by talking so excited about them and make them seem like they're the bee's knees for the Bucks, and make someone else go and get all enamored with them and then try and make some sort of a crazy move? Potentially. I don't feel like that's going on. That is just an opinion. It's just an instinct. It's just a gut. I think that when the pick is in on... it was my phone. You asshole. Buck for life. It was my phone. It's on vibrate, you prick. It's going to be Jameis Winston. Now, what does that make me feel like as a fan? Which is the follow-on question. Because really what seems to happen in these threads is immediately when you have this conversation, the discussion isn't about who's the better quarterback, the better thrower of the football, the better leader of men on the field, any of those sorts of things. That doesn't seem to be the big priority. It's not to say Marcus Mariota is not a hell of an athlete and didn't have a tremendous and productive collegiate career, and his skills may even translate well to the next level. I'm not saying that that's not a possibility. I'm saying that I don't believe that he is even one step behind Jameis Winston as a thrower of the football and a quarterback in the NFL level. I think he's a solid 3, 4, 5 spots behind him in that. Do I think Brett Hundley's better than him? No, that's not what I'm trying to say. What I'm saying is I don't think it's a 1 and 2. I think it's a 1 and 6. Now, you guys know, because you've listened to me for a long time, that I am one of these character guys. I am. Now, and Calico, I don't know off the top of my head. I am so out of touch with stats from last year, whereas normally I could pull some of that stuff out of my ass, I'm going to be incapable of it. But it's a good discussion thread, like Calico always does. Calico brings good discussion threads about what's going on. But I think that we have to look at last year from a defensive perspective in four quarters and look at what the defense looked like in each quarter and where we saw improvement. I don't know that that'll vet out that our defense improved, but I believe it will. anecdotally, I believe it will. Anyway, if we go to the off-the-field stuff, which seems to be the only place where the Mariota camp bangs their chest, I find irony in the fact that this fan base, by and large, wanted us to go after Hardy, but had issue with Winston. I really don't get that. Now, I personally, and I said this last year, the off-the-field stuff doesn't bother me with Winston. I don't find it to be aberrant. Obviously, the rape allegations are scary, but you have to follow what's going on in the legal system. And either you believe the legal system works or you don't. And if you're gonna argue that the legal system works, that the legal system doesn't work, then what you're saying is you're never going to believe it, unless you think that this is some mad, you know, this is some trumped up something or another, right? Lenny Kramitz in the chat room says, I think some people are nervous because who can name the last state of Florida guy who made an impact in the NFL, Culpepper from UCF? Well, we won a Super Bowl with one of them. Now, that's not to say Brad Johnson was some sort of a superstar, right? But that's not necessarily what you have to have either. I don't know that geography really is a data point that correlates to skill necessarily. And there was a time where Miami quarterbacks could do anything they wanted. Right, there was a great Pittsburgh quarterback who could do everything except for win a Super Bowl. The NFL is not the legal system. I don't know what that means, Callie. You're going to have to speak in more sentences for me to follow your thread since you don't call in. I'd like to because I know that you're smart, and I'd love that dialogue to begin. Right, but I can't do it with that little data. The legal system is outside of the NFL. I didn't say the NFL was the legal system. What I'm saying is, if you don't believe in the legal system that exists, if you're not going to take their word for it, right, then what word are you going to take? Now, can the NFL take action above and beyond that? They can, and they've proven that they will, right? But to be honest, I just don't get it. I don't understand why people think this is a big deal. With regards to the crab legs, this is just absolute bullshit. Anyone who ever did anything of any substance at high school or at college got hookups. Hell, people did it without playing sports. They did it with academics. They did it with everything. You had a deal. This is the... The fact that the crab leg thing is even a topic of discussion fucking pisses me off. It's just stupid. It doesn't speak to his character. It doesn't speak to what a bad guy he is. It doesn't speak to anything. It speaks to a kid who had a hookup. And any of you guys who can say that you didn't do that, you're full of shit. Or you didn't have any friends. Sorry to be so bullish about it, but Jesus Christ, I was at UCF and I knew the girl that worked at the Hungry Howie's. Warhol suite ate free 3 nights of the week. Calico says the NFL is all about image. That's very true. And I think they've been doing a good job of making Jameis's image very, very polished lately. Obviously, he comes in with a black mark on his record of an accusation. And this is a great discussion that's not necessarily football related about rape shield laws. And whether or not, while we're trying to protect the person who was attacked or allegedly attacked, we should protect both sides of this until there's some sort of information. Because otherwise, all you need is an allegation. The concept of innocent until proven guilty is gone. And that's not fair. It's not fair at all. So, skip to your question. Who do I think we should take? I think we should take Jameis Winston. Who do I think we're going to take? I think we're going to take Jameis Winston. I don't think it is a hard decision, to be quite honest. But again, that's not saying that Marcus Mariota is not a good player. I just don't happen to like the game that I saw from what he did in college. I don't like what he does in the intermediate and deeper throws. And I just don't think it's going to translate quite as well. I could be wrong. I could be totally full of shit. You never know. But what I'm more interested in is what the Bucks are going to do with these other draft picks. That's one of the reasons why I'm very excited to have Steve calling in a little while, and why I'm excited to have Mark Cook calling in, because I saw Pewter Report release their final seven-round mock draft. And when you look at needs on this team, and as Calico pointed out and other people in the chat room pointed out, it's not like we're a quarterback away from a Super Bowl. Now, you could probably make an argument that any team is a great quarterback away from being competitive. But we are not a quarterback away from a Super Bowl. Now, one thing that I'm shocked by, and I'll talk about this until Steve calls in, is why we even have a running back on some of these mock drafts. Maybe one of you guys can explain to me why we're looking at running backs, period. Now, do I think we've got six running backs that are awesome or five running backs that are amazing? I think we have really surfaceable running backs. I don't know why there is a jihad, and now this whole damn podcast is being recorded by the NSA because I used the word jihad, against Doug Martin. But there certainly is. There certainly is a sentiment that the team does not like what Doug Martin does. I don't get it. I don't see it on the film. I don't see it. Oh, no, he used the word film. He's so old. Get over it, people. You know what the fuck I'm talking about. But when you talk about Michael James and Bobby Rainey and Charles Sims, I think we got Steve White calling in right now. Let's see what we got here. Good evening. Welcome to What the Buck. Who do we have on the line here?
This will be Steve White.
Steve White is in the house. Wow, this is a new number for you, Steve. You going big time on me?
Yeah, no, I just got a cell phone finally.
I'm going to check and see if our levels are good. It's been forever since we've been online, so I want to make sure the guys can hear you. It looks like your levels are a little bit hot. Let me fix them real quick, and then I'll give you a little intro. And then I know that you did an interview recently on another, like a real radio station, where you were talking about you know, what you see going on with the draft. And I'm going to let you I want you to riff a little bit on how you think this is going to play out for the Bucks. And first, but before we get that going, I definitely want to do the initial question of, is it Jameis or is it not?
Well, it's got to be Jameis. Okay. I think that I said this on Rock Riley's TV show the other day. At this point, the Bucks have allowed conventional wisdom to become that we're going to take Jameis Winston. And when you do that and you allow all the fans to start expecting Jameis Winston, well, then if you pick somebody other than Jameis Winston, that guy's going to be chopped liver. And if they knew that they were going to pick somebody other than Jameis, and they come out and said now they knew who they were going to pick by the time the combine rolled around and basically just everything confirmed it after that, they would have started leaking information otherwise. They would have started, you know, they'd have planted the seed around town to let people know, hey, it might not be Jameis, it might be this other guy. But you can't turn on the radio or TV in the last month or so and see anybody making a case for anybody other than Jameis Winston. So it's almost like you'll be setting somebody else up for failure if you were to take them instead of Jameis Winston right now. So I feel like they have two options. You either take Jameis Winston or you get some kind of blockbuster deal and you trade down. But those are the only two things they can do tomorrow night and keep the fan base on board with them.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting how the Bucks have set up this model where it's obvious. And because we pick first, it's not like any sort of subterfuge actually does us any good. We're not doing a smokescreen. We get the choice of whoever the hell we want. So like you said, right, unless an RG3-like deal comes across and the Bucks make some sort of blockbuster 37-player, you know, Stratego-like maneuver, it doesn't really matter.
Right. It really doesn't. Now, you know, if there was somebody that coveted Mariota that way, it would have made sense for us to leave a little bit more intrigue. But I just think – teams are actually scared after the RG3 trade and how it kind of worked out. Obviously, RG3 came out like gangbusters that first year, but he's been a ghost of himself since he injured his knee again. And the Rams kind of made out like fat cats. So nobody wants to be the Washington Redskins. Everybody wants to be the Rams, if anybody, in that scenario. So I don't see anybody putting together another package like that anytime soon.
All right, so if we go past the number one pick, which is in a lot of ways, and is often the case, the easiest of all the picks to kind of evaluate, tell me the guys that you think are going to shock us, that are going to be available for us in round two, round three, et cetera, based on the sort of priority of needs on this team.
This is a year where I think you will see if you're a person that reads mock drafts and stuff like that, there's so much difference from mock draft to mock draft, because this is just one of those years where it's hard to predict. It's very strong for some positions. I think this is another strong year for wide receivers. I think to a certain extent it's a strong year for edge rushers. But then you get to positions like offensive tackle, and there's some people that will make the case that there's not a first round grade on any left tackle that's coming out this year. So does that mean teams are going to make a run on the few that are pretty good? Or is everybody going to wait to the end of the first round to start taking those offensive tackles? We would kind of hope for the second scenario, right?
Yeah.
Because obviously we need a lot of help on the offensive line. But if there's a run on them and there's still, you know, a credible edge rusher available or a credible wide receiver even, we still kind of need that third wide receiver at least create some competition there, or maybe even a cornerback. You just don't know who's going to be available this year. It's going to be really hard to predict who those first 32 picks are.
Now, it's interesting. You brought up two positions that I want to focus on a little bit. And because I'm fatigued because of this golf tournament, which, by the way, Steve, thanks for joining us on Friday. I'm looking forward to being out there with you.
Yep.
The wide receiver, the third wide receiver position, and the cornerback position. Now, on my needs list, I've got quarterback, I've got offensive line, preferably tackle, defensive line, linebacker, and then everybody else. Because what this coaching tree has seemed to claim, and I don't know if it's still true, is that they could go build defensive backs. They can go find them. They can go build them. They know how to do that. I don't know if that's still the case. And on the third wide receiver, they seem to think Lewis Murphy is something, but I think that's the guy that can creep back in. What do you think about my comment about the DBs? Is that still the case like it was back in the heyday when they could go get the undersized guys and do magical things with them because of the system?
Well, no, I think sometimes you just end up getting special guys. You know, we were blessed to get Rondae Barber down here, but, you know, a lot of cornerbacks we drafted came and went after Rondae. We kept trying to find the next one, and it really didn't work out. They were blessed to get Peanut Tillman up with Chicago, and then they brought in the other kid, I think from the Indianapolis Colts. But they drafted a bunch of corners up there too. That all those guys didn't necessarily work out. So it gets to a point where you say to yourself, once again, it might just be that a cornerback is the best player available at that slot this year. But even above and beyond that, you get to the point where you say, okay, you know, we got Mike Jenkins back on another one-year deal. We got the other kid, what's his name, from Mississippi State. You know, he's still on his rookie deal. Neither one of those guys, you know, have kind of distanced themselves. If they did, I don't think we would have re-signed Mike Jenkins in the first place. So if you got a guy that you think can be better than either one of those guys, I think you go ahead and pull the trigger. Because a good player is a good player is a good player. It sounds good. Like, we might not break the bank for a guy in free agency.
Right.
But with the rookie cap being what it is nowadays, you go ahead and take that guy because he's going to be a lot cheaper than he used to be anyway. And we do need some help, you know, in our secondary.
Do you rate that above the help we need from a depth perspective on the defensive line because of the Jacques Smiths and TJ Fitinicums that showed some splashes last year and may, under some good coaching, end up being some diamond in the rough? You know, I think everyone's still looking for that next Michael Bennett, and I'm not saying either one of those gentlemen are he, but, I mean, there's always that hope that under the right tutelage, one of these guys that has all the right raw material can kind of emerge.
Absolutely. And you got Will Golston, too.
Oh, and how do I leave Will Golston off that list? Shit.
Right. You know, there's a bunch of little, you know, kind of under-the-radar guys that could make a contribution. But in this case, it wouldn't necessarily be that I thought it was a bigger need. It just be that, like I said, if there's a run on edge rushes early in the draft, there might not be a guy in that slot that's worthy of, you know, the top pick in the second round.
Right.
And there might be a cornerback that's just rated much, much higher than the next available edge rusher. So that's kind of what I'm saying, because if I'm looking at it, if I'm a GM, and there's only, you know, there's a real good crop of edge rushers, but it's only like a handful of them, and then there's a big drop-off. Well, once people start taking them, I'm going to make sure I get one out of that handful before they're all gone. And so if that happens, whether it's a run on them, whether it's a run on offensive tackles, and then we end up in a situation where, yeah, we got bigger needs on the team, but this guy is on the board, is head and shoulders above everybody else. And you just got to go ahead and take that guy and hope it works out later on in the draft.
You know, it speaks to something a buddy of mine that I sit with at the games said. His comment was, I'm taking the best player available at a position that no one's been picked before the second best player available at a position of need almost every time. Because the difference between one and two is quite often pretty disparate. And
right.
And while I don't think that that's a tautology, it's not always going to be true. There's some wisdom, I think, in those words, which is, like you just said, if everyone's going and they think that edge rushers are the flavor of the week and you're nine down, but you needed cornerbacks too, and there's a really solid corner, then damn an edge rusher. Go get them in free agency, do something else, build internally. Don't go force the model because you think you need that position.
Absolutely. And look, you know, people say best player available. Let's be honest. best player available, usually there's a in inside best player available is how much of a need is it for you. That's built into best player available. That makes a guy more or less valuable to you on your draft board anyway. So, yeah, you want to try to fill your need, but you don't want to reach so far that, you know, you just basically end up getting – you overdraft a guy who never ends up performing for you when you could have gotten a very good player, even if it wasn't necessarily at your position of need, but a guy that can come in and contribute right away and be a very good player for you.
Right, right, absolutely. All right, Steve, listen, before we get going, because it's going to be early night for the big man, because I still got a lot of work to do in the tournament. we got Mark Cook coming in after you. What is your surprise? Do you have anything you want to throw out there that you're going to shock Bucks with? Like, we're going to take another Mike Glennon in the fifth round or something like that that no one else is thinking about, or something you want them to pay attention to in the draft?
Well, I mean, I don't know. You know, like I said, this is 1 year where I think things are just a little bit unpredictable. It'll be interesting to see if some of these guys fall. You know, last couple of weeks you had Randy Gregory with the positive test at the combine. You had Shane Ray earlier this week get pulled over with weed. You know, maybe you end up getting those guys if they fall off the board a little bit. Go ahead and get those guys and take a risk. I think for Bucks fans, most of them wouldn't be shocked about pretty much anything except if we took a guy with some character risk. I think, you know, for some people, that's a little bit why they were maybe a little bit hesitant to believe we were going to take Jameis in the first place.
Right.
But I could see if a guy maybe has some character issues, but it's, you know, it's not like hitting women or assaulting people, is something like weed, that maybe, you know, a guy dropped so far that you just finally say, look, this guy's way better than where he's, you know, where we're drafting right now. We got to go ahead and get that guy and just let the chips fall where they may. Because evidently they think they have a strong locker room right now, and maybe they can handle that.
And, you know, this, I hate about talking about how history repeats itself, but when Warren Sapp came out and he dropped like a stone because of the issues, they took a risk, and it paid off. Now, you take those risks sometimes, and sometimes they don't pay off. But you just said something really important. They believe they've got a strong enough locker room right now that they can handle this. Then maybe they take those risks. One last question before I let you go, Steve. We were very excited going into last year. I think you and I both were almost in love with this damn staff. We thought they were going to come in here and go gangbusters, and we were going to be back in the business. What are your thoughts right now about this staff? And are you excited about the small changes that were made? And what are you looking to see come training camp with regards to the way this coaching staff has been formed up?
Well, I mean, I still have confidence in the staff. I don't have confidence in our offensive line. And right. That was the problem last season. And so until I actually see the offensive line get fixed or some things, you know, at least look like they're, you know, putting some plaster or Paris over the holes, I can't fully get excited about going into this season. It's a matter of, you know, last year I had some concerns, but I think I let my heart kind of overcome my mind and say, you know, this offensive line is just going to work itself out somehow. And then we had, you know, the issue with Jeff Teffer going out as well. But when your offensive line is that bad, I'm not sure if Jesus Christ was calling the plays, we'd have had much more success. So we, in theory, we've gotten worse than we were last year because we cut the left tackle we brought in, who was terrible. But we haven't replaced them. We still have a hole in the right guard. I feel like the guys who tried the right guard last year tried their best. The best just wasn't good enough. And we've done nothing to address either position. Just saying that you think DeMar Dotson can play left tackle, even though we know that the two times they've tried to put him in left tackle in his career as a Buccaneer, it hasn't worked out well at all, is not addressing the offensive line. And so, yeah, it's going to be great that we have a rookie quarterback, and maybe we'll have a rookie, you know, left tackle with the top pick in the second round. That's what I'm really hoping for. But look, you got a rookie left tackle? Hey, man, it might be another rough season for us. So I'm kind of, you know, instead of last year where I got my hopes up and got disappointed, I'm going to keep my hopes a little bit lower this year. Hopefully they'll surprise me in a positive manner.
Well, I think we're both going to hold out that hope, Steve, and we'll be talking more often as we get things going here and I get my legs back underneath me after the golf tournament. So, obviously, I'll be pulling you on as often as you're available.
Absolutely. I can't wait.
All right. Thanks a lot, Steve, and I'll see you on Friday.
Thanks for having me.
All right, brother. Bye. Steve White, ladies and gentlemen, you can follow him at SGW94. Buck for Life making fun of me because it's my first day. You know, it's funny, when you don't mess with the bubble gum and toothpicks that run this pseudo radio station for a while, you forget all the little gimmicky shit you have to do to make it work. And, you know, maybe one day we'll grow up and have a real studio and a board op and all that sort of shit. But until then, you're kind of stuck with me. Now, on the podcast, I normalize the volumes. I run a normalized filter, so it should make it a little bit better for people listening after the fact. But you poor bastards that get it right in the teeth. On the first run, I have to apologize in advance for that. So that was Steve White. I believe Mark Cook's going to be calling in here directly. Mark Cook from PewterReport.com, they just did their 7-round mock draft. They picked every one of the rounds. It's amazing. I wish there was some sort of statistical study done about the efficacy of 7-round mock drafts. I don't know what the accuracy could possibly be after like the second round, even with people that do that shit for a living. But for fans, they want to guess. They want to know what's going on. And I think that, like Steve mentioned, and I'm not sure about you guys in the chat room, I'd love to see your feedback on this, whether you see that slot wide receiver or cornerback or safety even as more important or critical as some of the other positions that we've discussed, whether it be defensive line or offensive line, et cetera. We went and got some offensive linemen last year in the draft and didn't get much out of that. But, you know, it doesn't mean you can't keep picking. I mean, for the same argument that people say you keep taking quarterbacks if you have a chance, you got to keep taking these guys and see what they can do. And I know that in the mock draft that Pewter Report did, there's a number of offensive linemen that they've earmarked. And we'll have to see what they're able to do under this coaching regime that seemed to try and force zone blocking last year, despite the fact that it was clearly a square peg in a round hole. I'm not sure at all whether we're going to do that this year. Let me see if that's Mr. Cook letting me know what's going on. It is. He'll be calling in directly. But I for one, am looking forward to a return to power man blocking, which a lot of these guys seem to be able to do better at. It's not like I have a particular religious affinity for one of these schemes versus the other. Typically, it's done based on the talent you have on the shelf. Christopher Oxendine in the chat room says, defensive end, interior offensive line, safety, slot receiver, then kick returner. It's interesting. I really don't feel, and this may be age bias. And Lenny Kravitz is also talking about the secondary. I actually liked Mike Jenkins. I think he could actually be good if he could stay on the damn field. You know, that's going to be interesting. When I say age bias, what I mean is back in the early days, and Steve and I talked about it a little bit when we were just chatting on the phone here on the interview, the Buccaneers really did believe back in the Herm Edwards, Raheem Morris time, and I don't mean from Raheem when he was the head coach, I mean when he was the DB coach, that they could go get raw material and they could build them into these system corners. And that's really, you know, the rap that Rondé got, despite the fact that he was an Iron Man and excellent for us and incredibly responsible for our Super Bowl victory, et cetera, et cetera. He's got the rap as a system corner, and I think for good reason. Is that a bad thing? No, I don't. I don't really give a shit about system corners. I don't give a shit about anything like that, as long as you're running that system. Right, it sucks to not be running that system and then go get someone. That's like going and getting a stud man cover guy, and then you don't run man very often, and it does nothing for you. I think our team may have done that once or twice as well. So with regards to offensive line, again, my bias is fat guy bias. I happen to think there's plenty of good athletic fat guys out there, and they all should understand basic blocking. We got Mark Cook calling in. Let's switch over to Mark. Hello, Mr. Cook. How are you tonight, sir?
What's up, Mr. D? How are you, old school?
I am doing just fine, man. I'm dicking with these levels. It's been so long since I've been back here in the studio. I barely know how to log into the computer anymore. How have you been doing?
I thought you gave up on it for a while, man. We were disappointed.
This is the worst time of the year for me, not only because of the fatigue from the season, but I just hate the draft. I'm like one of the only fans in the world, I think, that just gives zero fucks about the draft.
Well, I think that's a huge, huge mistake, because obviously it's kind of like college recruiting. People that don't like college recruiting, that's the next 4 years of your football team. And hopefully, if the Bucs draft well, it's the next 10 years of their football team.
No, I understand that, but I don't see any science that we can take advantage of. Like, I understand that they have entire teams and scouts and data, and they crunch all these numbers, and there's a system behind that. But from a fan perspective, unlike watching game tape and unlike watching systems and doing those sorts of things where I feel like I can add some value, I don't have the time nor the resources to go and become what I consider an expert on every single college in the country. You know, so that's why I lean on guys like you and guys like Walter Football to go do that for me and tell me what I should know.
Well, and even the big name guys aren't experts on every one of them because, like you say, there's just so much. It's overwhelming. I mean, you know, we go to Mobile and we go to East-West Shrine Game and go to Pro Days and things like that, but that's still such a limited, you know, reflection of how many college kids are eligible for this draft. I mean, you know, we never talked to Charles Sims last year or Austin Seferian Jenkins, and they end up being, you know, second and third-round picks for the team. So, you know, I respect the heck out of Charlie Campbell because as far as a guy that I know personally anyway, he's as thorough as anybody and usually pretty on the money. But it's a full-time deal for guys like him. You know, he can't – you know, he doesn't enjoy watching football games on Sundays or on Saturdays because it's his job. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, and I kind of understand that. I don't know what it's like to watch a Buccaneer football game without this computer in my lap or on the desk at the stadium or wherever, you know. But anyway, one day when I'm, you know, rich and famous and retired from Pew Report, I'll be able to actually watch a football game and cheer and enjoy it again.
So then next year is what you're telling me.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's not happening.
Now, listen, you guys just put up, or and I say just put up, I just looked at it. It may not have just been put up.
We put it up 3 months ago.
Shut up. A complete 7-round mock draft. And there are some trends in there. Scott Reynolds was the author. I'm sure you contributed in some way, shape, or form. You guys seem to work together a lot. Your entire team does a good job of sort of working together on some big articles like that. I believe you've been a Jameis fan for quite some time. And when I say fan, I mean a supporter. I know that you do a good job, despite what some have said, of separating your Seminole fandom from what you believe is the efficacy of the player on the field. And I think that those are hollow charges lobbied by people who don't want to think much. But
well, I appreciate that.
If we get past Jameis Winston, because I really don't think there's any other alternative at this point.
No.
What do you see the Bucs doing? We had a little bit of debate about the order or preference of need past quarterback. What are your thoughts about that?
I'm sorry, what was the last part? The need for what?
Yeah, the order or preference for need. Like, so do you see us as after quarterback, is it we better get a damn offensive lineman or we better go get a cornerback? What do you see?
You know, I think when you're talking about the second round, that 34th pick, which there's some rumblings that maybe the Bucs try and move back up, it just really depends on who's on their board and who they really have highly valued. I still think second round, third round, you almost have to go best player available. You know, again, if Todd Gurley falls to 34, I can assure you the Buccaneers are taking him. They don't need Todd Gurley. I think Todd Gurley would make him a better football team, no question, which he's not going to fall that far unless they find out, you know, he shot somebody or did something crazy in the next 24 hours. But what I'm saying is, in that situation, it's certainly best player available. But, you know, now when you get to the point where you've got an offensive lineman and a safety ranked virtually the same thing on your big board, then you go need, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
You know, and then maybe towards the later end of the draft, that's when maybe you can, you know what, we might need a little more depth at outside linebacker on the Sam, so we'll get this kid or so on and so forth. But really, that second and third round, I think it's so crucial for the team to be, you know, open to whatever because, again, you know, a guy like Todd Gurley falls in your lap at 34, which, again, we know it's not going to happen. I'm just using that as a crazy example. Then, you know, you almost have to take the guy. I mean, regardless of your other need. I watched a thing today. I don't remember if it was Dominic talking or who it was, but brought up what the Cowboys did when they took Troy Aikman and then I think they took Steve Walsh, number one, the next year.
Right.
And the thought process was you can never have too many, you know, good quarterbacks. And if your other guy doesn't work out, you've got another one. And then if the first one does work out, then you've got excellent trade bait. So, it's kind of an interesting philosophy, and it does make some sense.
Well, and that was our approach with Josh Freeman and Josh Johnson, and it didn't quite work out the same way as it did for Dallas.
A little bit different, yeah.
But so if we move, I don't want to talk about Todd Gurley because that makes us talk about running. No, I do want to talk about. Damn it! Thank you for opening this topic. Tell me why the Bucs don't like Doug Martin because you seem to know some shit about this.
You know, excuse me, I got getting over a little bit of a cold, so if I cough, I apologize.
That's okay. The quality of this podcast is so bad, no one will notice.
Well, you mean my velvet pipes aren't coming through and impressing the ladies out there?
There's not going to be any Howard Sternian use of a speaker, if that's what you're referring to.
Oh, dadgummit. Oh, well. All right, I'll lay off the sexy radio voice, and I'll go back to my normal voice. But,
by the way, the Lightning just scored. It's 1-0.
You know what? And here's the crazy thing. You know, I'm a hillbilly from out here in the country, and people make fun of me. I'm actually over at my cousin's on the other side of our 30-acre property. We've got the entire front bumper off of my car right now, replacing a headlight. Thank you, Chevrolet, by the way, for making you take the front bumper off. There's a Jimmy Fallon thank you note I should send him. But anyway, so I haven't been following the Lightning game. Give me an update of what's going on.
It's 1-0. I think we should be in the third by now. I'm not sure the other details, but the people in the chat room told me it was 1-0 Lightning.
Okay, good, good. I haven't even, and out here in the country, we don't get cell phone signal, so I couldn't even check Twitter earlier. But anyway, and when I get off the phone with you, I'll be back over there till midnight, put a bumper back on. But Doug Martin, let's go back to Doug. I don't know. I mean, let me just say this. I was a big Adrian Claiborne fan. The organization liked Adrian Claiborne, but for whatever reason, I don't know that they loved Adrian Claiborne. And obviously, by them allowing him to walk and sign with the Falcons, that said it, and for whatever reason. And, you know, personal preference, you know, doesn't fit the scheme, who knows. I think Doug Martin kind of falls into that thing where they like Doug Martin, but I don't think they love Doug Martin. I mean, they gave him every opportunity last year when he came back from injury to play and perform. As Scott was really on the Bobby Rainey bandwagon, not me so much, because I like Doug Martin, because I can't forget 2012. I don't think he's forgot how to run a football, catch a football, score 12 touchdowns total, and run for 1,450 yards. I don't think he forgot how to do that. But for whatever reason, the organization doesn't appear to be solidly in his corner, if that makes sense. I think they view him as a good running back, but not an exceptional running back. And I think that's one reason that Charles Sims is here, because he fits more into that mold of a Matt Forte, although I haven't seen it, but the organization has seen it. And I think that's why, if Charles Sims stays healthy, he's the guy this year. We also think the Buccaneers are going to look at running back, because probably later in the draft we have Matt Jones from Florida, because he's a big bruising type running back. And we have to admit, none of these running backs in the roster scared defensive fronts or linebackers when it's fourth and one or third and two. You know what I mean?
No, but they went out and re-signed. Yeah, but they went out and re-signed Javorski Lane, who should.
You know what? And here's the deal. Scott did a story his last Fab where he sat down with Javorski. We had an opportunity to talk to Javorski. Great guy. He's below his weight that he came in at camp last year. He's really changed his lifestyle. But he goes, Dirk Koetter is very excited to have him. Dirk Koetter
should be
reached out to him and wants to utilize him more so than he was used last year. And we excuse me. But we could look at we could spend a whole hour on, and we could spend the next 6 hours on the mess on the offense last year, but I don't want to bring up, you know, depressing things, so we won't. But let's just say players weren't utilized to the best of their ability, and Javorski Lane was probably one of those guys. But, you know, he did end up missing 2 games for violation of the banned substance that he took to lose weight, and then he broke his leg, I think, in the Chicago game, so he wasn't available towards the end. But there were opportunities where I think he could have been utilized a little bit better in those short yardage situations. But we do know the Buccaneers would like to have a bigger back, Rainey, James, Martin, I mean, all within, you know, 10 or 15 pounds of each other, basically, similar styles. You know, Rainey's probably the more shifty of the guy. But anyway, so we do know that that's something, but it's not a priority at the same time, and I think maybe that's because of Dirk Koetter's affection for Javorski Lane.
Well, I hope that's true, and I know that in the chat room, Calico Jack is talking about Koetter loving big backs, which is terrific. I'm a big fan of that. I think you've got to have that 1-2 punch. You've got to give that little off-speed stuff. If you're not giving the ball to the up back every once in a while in a more traditional set, then no one has to plan for it. There's a difference in the attack angle for your defensive line, and that's never good. When you can become predictable and they can have a target N yards back in the backfield, and you never get pushed off of that, that's a challenge. I think that's one of the many problems we had last year, is that we were too predictable. Not necessarily predictable as far as what play we were going to run, but we were pretty predictable about where the hell our quarterback was going to end up when he tried to make a play, or a running back was going to end up when he tried to make his cuts.
Yep.
And Calico brought up as well, and I think this would be a great stat for someone to keep track of, and there's enough, you know, guys that can't see a girl naked that could do this in their basement, I hope. Runs negated by penalty. Mm-hmm. When you have a shitty offensive line like we did, Those things can be brutal. And when you look at the difference in a yard per carry, average being the thing between a back being favored and not favored, if one back loses a couple of 40-yard carries in a game, right, you know, that skews you pretty heavily.
You know, and that makes a lot of sense. And you know what? When you look at guys, when you take a look at guys at the end of the day that have 140 yards rushing on 28 carries, you know, there were 22 of those carries where they were 3 or 4 yard carries. A lot of times, we can go back to Cadillac Williams, which was a perfect example of that. Remember that game against Minnesota where he was kind of held in check. I think it was second or third game of the year, but anyway, his rookie year. But then he broke that long one as they were kind of icing the game away, which certainly inflated his stats. Next thing you know, his cleats are in the Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. So that's a good point. And when you get negative plays and you have to take those yards back off, you know, it really does the overall, you know, stat total, obviously, of the running back. But at the same time, you know, when you're a bad offensive line and you're not performing very well and all of a sudden a guy rips off a 40-yard run, it's human nature maybe as an official to say, somebody had to have been holding. You know what I mean? I mean, I know they don't make the calls after the run, but
sometimes they do.
Yeah, well, you're right. You're right. We have seen that. But you know what I mean? So, unfortunately, when you're not viewed as a very respectable team in general, you know, because I complained a lot last year, and people kind of got on me. It's like, oh, you're being a homer. But, you know, I thought the officiating in some of the Bucs games, you know, was very poorly done. And you can say that about most games to a degree or in most sports in general. Take a look at the Lightning and Detroit series, for instance. But you know what? Sometimes it's a legitimate criticism. And a lot of times, though, it has to do with reputation. And you hate to think that that's the way things are called, but it is called that way. I mean, you know, I know you're a big Duke fan, but my Krzyzewski gets the benefit of a lot of these calls. When you look at it statistically, you know what I mean? Whether it's right or wrong or whether the officials called it the right way, maybe, you know, it just is the way that it happened. You know, it's a respected program with guys that do things fundamentally sound. And so, you know, it just seems to be in favor sometimes officiating of the better football teams. And that's another reason why the Buccaneers, you know, have to get respectable again. I mean, it'll help them with the referees.
Well, and that's one of the things I used to love about coaching. There is absolutely an aspect to coaching in any sport of working the refs, pointing out things you want them to be aware of that benefit
sure.
you. And that's something that hopefully Coach Smith and the rest of the team can do well. You're right. Penalties often follow momentum. And so if you're constantly getting your teeth kicked in, chances are you're not getting a lot of calls. That's
yep.
just the way it works.
Yep.
But the calls are much like the first overall draft pick, not something we can impact. But
right.
with regards to your 7-round mock, who's the pick there that you think Bucs fans should know the most about coming into either watching it at the stadium Thursday or wherever they're watching it and going to the draft parties on Friday, Saturday, whenever? Who's the player that you guys, when you were doing the evaluation, were like, oh, shit, Bucs fans need to know this guy's name because we really hope we get him?
Really, Nate Orchard is a guy that we really, really believe the Buccaneers have a strong interest in, and it's not just because of some of our sources. There was a recent article out or tweet, I can't remember where it came from, where, you know, he spent some time in Tampa on a visit down here, and, you know, Lovie Smith really praised him to Nate. That's what Nate was telling the media member that interviewed him, and so I think that's a guy that Buccaneer fans should take a look at. I think he had 18.5 sacks last year. And he's not really the Simeon Rice, quick twitch, get around the edge kind of guy. Kind of has a little bit of that Adrian Claiborne where he's just going to work his ass off to get the sacks. But he's a lunch pail kind of guy. And the production's there. I mean, despite the fact that he's not, you know, this dominant, you know, quick off the edge, get around you kind of guy, pass rusher, the production's there. I mean, he was second in college football last year in sacks, and so that's a guy that I think Buccaneer fans should keep an eye on, because if he's available in the third round, I don't think there's any way that the Buccaneers pass on this guy. It's a guy that we know, not only from that article that they were excited about, but from some of our sources as well. You know, talented football player that can help this football team. Again, I don't know that he's a 15, 16 sack Michael Strahan type guy in this league. But I think he can be a double-digit guy, and I think that's going to be so crucial if Jacquees Smith continues his path of getting better. You've got George Johnson in there who ended
Ooh.
Up with 6 sacks last year on a part-time basis. And adding a guy like Nate Orchard to come in there on a rotational basis, maybe as a rookie, I think can really help this football team.
So it's interesting. You know, Nate Orchard's an interesting pick, an interesting call. The Bucs have seemed to want to get these sort of combo guys that are good against the pass but also can hold up against the run, and typically when you see the transition from the from the collegiate ranks to the NFL, especially for guys like this, even though he's not quick twitch. When you get against real big athletic offensive linemen, sometimes he can be negated. But I see what you're saying, and I'm glad you brought up George Johnson. We haven't mentioned his name. We did talk about earlier Jacques Smith and T.J. Fitinicum, both who've shown flashes here and there.
Sure,
and
sure. I like T.J. a lot. I really do. And we know Lovie Smith really, really thinks, and Joe Cullen, too, both think that this guy could be another Jacques Smith coming up this year.
Well, so before we start saying about another Jacques Smith had some flash early and then sort of petered out, right? This is something we've got to see more of. That's why when Michael Bennett did what Michael Bennett did, he got better and then continued to ascend. He didn't get better and then disappear. And what we've seen by some of these guys is they flash and then they disappear. So Joe Cullen and that staff has got to get to the point where they're building guys who can last more than two games. I don't mean physically last, but they've got enough moves, enough skill in their toolbox that they can go out there and be effective in a rotation. And again, you know, it's funny, you did the same thing I did. You didn't mention Will Golston.
Yeah, I tell you, I don't know what's going on with Will. Will played hurt last year. You know, he banged up his shoulder, I believe, earlier in the year. He was never really 100%, I don't think. But Will is a guy that I was really high on coming into last year, and he just had a really disappointing year. I mean, he had an opportunity, Derek. You go back and look at that first Saints game. He had an opportunity to get Drew Brees on the ground three times in that game. And I talked to him the next week in the open locker room about, you know, leaving his feet. You know what I mean? Drew Brees is so good with that little pump fake and getting defenders to leave their feet and try and get their hands up and throwing it forward, which is what you need to do with a short quarterback. I mean, it makes sense. I'm sure that he was told during the week, you know what I mean, we're going to kind of collapse the middle of the pocket. Outside guys, have some contain, but get your arms up. But unfortunately, sometimes you get in that no man's land and you can't get your hand on the quarterback. And Will was really pissed at how bad he played. I mean, he told me, he said, I should have had three sacks in that game. And he should have. And if you look at his missed opportunities, you know, he probably left six or seven sacks out there on a part-time rotational basis. And I think he finished the game, I mean, finished the year with two, maybe two for the year. So he could have been another six or eight sack guy easily, you know, had he had better technique.
Right.
But that's something that, you know, he's going to run out of time eventually. And I don't mean to knock the guy at all. I like him personally, but you know, this will be another test for him, another time. You know, Lovie Smith and Jason Light can't rely on potential. They can't say, well, this guy's got the size and the physical skill set. It's now about production going into their second year. And you know, Will's going to have to produce. You know, we talk about some of the other guys, TJ and some of those guys. And you talk about Jacques Smith kind of tailing off towards the end of the year. I don't think people realize how, you know, devastating when you lose Gerald McCoy in the middle, because he really got Jacques Smith those 6.5 sacks or however many he had last year in a sense, because of his, you know, it gave these guys one-on-one opportunities on the outside, and they've got to be able to excel there. And Clint McDonald missed some time as well, and Clint drew some attention too. And you had Henry Melton in there. I've heard from a member, and I know people are going to tell me I'm crazy, but I can assure you this is a true statement. And this person who said it may be absolutely nuts. But this person said they believe Henry Melton is a better pure pass rusher than Sue. Now, not an overall football player. Certainly they're two different calibers when it comes to that. But as far as an interior pass rusher, this member of the Buccaneer organization told me they think he's a better pure pass rusher, and they think that he could have potentially a huge, huge year. Now, you gamble because you sign him to a one-year deal. If he goes out there and gets 9 or 10 sacks and makes a Pro Bowl, working beside or in rotation with Gerald McCoy, you know, then you've just jacked up the price quite a bit for him. But but Lovey's got a great relationship with him, and they both have a lot of respect for each other, so maybe he gets a little bit of a hometown discount. And I know we're skipping way ahead.
That's
he may
okay.
come out and have two sacks all year. Who knows? May get injured in training camp. We don't know. But anyway, you know, the outside guys, whoever it is, whether it's Orchard, Johnson, Golson, Jacques, you know what I mean, they've got to take advantage of the interior. And when you look at Spence, Melton, Clint McDonald, and Gerald McCoy, those are pretty good defensive tackles. And I think you can stack those against anybody's interior defensive line. Maybe not Seattle, but really pretty much any other team. I would say the Buccaneers have the potential to be as good as anybody on the inside. So crucial for them to get some pressure from the outside, though.
Absolutely. Now, I want to change gears a little bit. Gil Arcia tweeted at 8:37 Buck source says players were informed that Winston will be their selection. Source also said that he was still in town as of this afternoon. A lot of us had said before when Jameis mentioned he wasn't going to the draft that the play would be for the Bucks, however they needed to do so, to have him walk out at Raymond James Stadium for these fans who are so thirsty for something to be excited about.
Mm-hmm.
But the question that I'll ask, if I assume that something like that could happen, but even if not, the fact that Jameis and Marcus both decided not to go to the draft, an event that the NFL enjoys selling ticket packages upwards of thousands of dollars for people to attend, we have people that are there, Kirk, you know, Buckshot's there, Big Nass is there, Shanice is there. Many of these folks are flying to Chicago and not even able to get into the facility to watch the picks. What does this do to the NFL if players start going, yeah, I'll pass?
You know, I don't know that it's going to be a trend going forward. But this year in particular, you know, there's some guys that are going to be there tomorrow night that very well may turn into the Aaron Rodgers or the Johnny Manziel, or, you know, where they're on camera and names are being called and they're being passed over. I think some of these guys may have looked at that as you know, I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be that Aaron Rodgers that's forever known as the guy that, you know, the camera pans to after every pick. You know what I mean? So, but I don't know that that's going to be a trend going forward. I think it's more of an aberration than what's going forward. But you never know. I mean, I know that a lot of people really hammered Jameis when he announced that he wasn't going to the draft, said he was scared and afraid of the boos. My thought on that was, it's not like Paul Tagliabue. Good Lord.
You're going to pull out Pete Rozelle? Rozelle.
It's not like Tex Schramm and Pete Rozelle are going to it's not like Roger Goodell is going to say with the first pick the Tampa Bay Buccaneers select a player. I mean, they're going to still say his name. The boos are still going to come. If people are going to boo, they're still going to mean it. Just because he's physically not there, and I can assure you he's going to have a television on. He's going to hear those boos, so whether it's in person. But what I'm saying is a lot of people hammered him saying, you know, he didn't want to deal with that. And then a week later, you know, Mariota makes basically the same decision. It's just a unique thing, I think, maybe. Really more so than a trend for the future. But we'll just have to see how it pans out next year.
Well, I don't know if I care one way or the other, but I think it's interesting when you think about the business of the NFL because that event has become a pretty big deal.
Sure.
And when all of the stars don't show up, and that's not fair to say all the stars because there will be stars there. And as far as, you know, you don't want to be the next Aaron Rodgers. Listen, Aaron Rodgers landed pretty well on his feet.
Yeah.
I think he's probably okay. He's crying himself to sleep on his gigantic pillow made of money. But
and his hot girlfriend as a pillow. Yes.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, that's now you've distracted me. Anyway, listen, Mark. Mark, you obviously the things you do at PewterReport.com, you, Scott Reynolds, the entire team over there are outstanding. We love what you do. When we get our gears back underneath us and we start moving, we'll be having you guys on more regularly. What can you tell the fans going into the draft party tomorrow night that you may not have told them yet? Or is there something about PewterReport.com that you want to tell them before I let you go and I start packing up for this golf tournament that if we did not pick the draft weekend, your goofy ass would be playing in?
You know, absolutely. I love golf tournaments, particularly scrambles. And I'll just say this. I am extremely – not that I didn't expect you, because whenever you guys do any function, I mean, it's first class all the way. But every time I see a post of some of the prizes you have and different things like that, the people that you've been able to attract, the players and things, you know, you guys do a tremendous, tremendous thing. I wish I had your energy, Derek. I wish I had your drive to accomplish these kind of things, because it is important to me. I'm involved in one charity. We're having our function on Tuesday night. Let me plug that.
Sure.
It's the Youth Alliance, and people can email me, Mark at Pewter Report. It's a dinner, and it's a fundraiser. It's a group that goes around the world. It targets at-risk, you know, youth, particularly middle school kids. Kids that have been bullied, you know, suicide prevention, those kind of things. And Reggie Dabbs. I really recommend people YouTubing Reggie Dabbs and listening to some of his inspirational messages. Here's a guy who was born, his mother was a prostitute. So, you know, he knows about tough upbringings and things like that, and it's just a great inspirational message that he has. But what I was going to say is, you know, I just don't have the energy or drive, or maybe I'm not as good a man as you are, but you guys do a tremendous job, and I know Cheryl works her tail off, and really everybody, Ryan and the Buck crew. I'm jealous, I'll be honest with you. You guys do a great job. I wish I was more like Derek Fournier. You guys do a tremendous job, and I wish I could be there at that tournament. I'm almost considering buying the $40 ticket just to come hang out and maybe win some of those great raffle prizes, because It's some first-class stuff, man.
Well, I appreciate that amazing lump of very nice words and kind regards. We have an amazing team. You know, Cheryl is really the founder of our charitable side, and the things that she does are tireless, so I appreciate that. And we'd love to have you for dinner. For anyone out there who's listening about this as well, you don't have to just come golf. If you want to come to dinner, we're having a upscale barbecue dinner at Bardmore Golf and Country Club. It's a buffet for $40. You can get a ticket, and you too can bid on the raffles and participate in the amazing prizes that we've got out there. So we'd love to see you, Mark. Let me know. Hit me up. Let me know if you're coming over there.
Yeah. I'll see if I can work that out for sure. It's just it's a long night tomorrow night, man. And then there'll be some post reaction stuff. And here's the deal: most likely we'll have that first round pick at One Buccaneer Place around, I'm just guessing, around 2 or 3 that afternoon. That's what happened last year when Mike Evans was drafted. We had him on a conference call from New York. But then he was flown in overnight, and the media had an opportunity to meet him. So I mean, it's just really tough to be able to do it on that second day. But if I'm not there, I'm definitely there with you guys in spirit, because I'm like I said, I'm a little jealous of how awesome of a job you guys do.
Well, I appreciate that, man, and certainly I'll pass it on the kind regards to the team, because they are amazing. I want to thank you for calling in tonight, and I want to wish you well in all the articles and all the excitement that comes around draft, as now we start getting to facts instead of speculation. And I
wish me well on getting that bumper back on my car, because I'm going to look really weird driving to Tampa tomorrow without a front bumper on my car if I can't figure it out.
Well, Chris Oxentine in the chat room said that they fixed that in the 2014 Malibu, and you maybe should just upgrade. So,
you know, I maybe if Chris will loan me a little bit of money, I'll do that. But gosh, I every time I see my statement on how much money I owe on this 2012, I'm like, where does it? When's this ever going to end? But anyway.
All right. Well, I'm gonna do your next car loan. Hey. Thanks again, Mark.
Sure.
Best regards to Scott and the entire team over there, and we will see you guys online at PewterReport.com.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks.
All right, take care, brother.
Derek, bye.
Bye-bye. Mark Cook of PewterReport.com, as always, entertaining. Very kind words, by the way, for us. I want to thank you guys for joining us. I know we got the Lightning game going on. It is, let me pull over to the live update, 2 minutes and 30 seconds left. Lightning are still up 1-0. That's very exciting. I'm actually just going to sign off, and I'm going to watch the rest of the Lightning game. I want to thank you guys for joining us. I will get this podcast up this evening as rapidly as possible, and we'll get a schedule in here that'll let you guys know what's going on more regularly than we have lately. So I apologize for the absenteeism. I will do my best to do better about that, and thanks again for joining us. I'll get this podcast up directly. I'm not even playing any outro music. Thanks to everyone in the chat room, Buck for Life, Yusuf, Christopher, Calico Jack, all the viewers that were there before who didn't have names, Lenny Kramitz, etc. Great to have you guys here. I am out of here.